Our final argument this morning is Hudgens versus Hudgens. Getting settled. I'm sure you're aware the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, and then the respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone. You can adjust the podium up and down, and please begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Matthew Fleng. I represent the appellant, Richard Hudgens. This matter is before the court following the decision of Hennepin County District Judge Nicole Engish making a determination that the appellant is to pay spousal maintenance in the amount of $1,782.23 per month. The issues we've raised on appeal are essentially that we believe that the court did not take into consideration Mr. Hudgens' ability to pay, that she only took into consideration the needs of the respondent. This is a kind
well,
of
is that true though? I mean, because the judge did discuss the fact that, I mean, she had a really hard decision to make because she had, on the one hand, the wife who's disabled and isn't able to work. I mean, I think she made that finding. And on the other hand, she has the husband who at least is able to work. I mean, he's demonstrated an ability to obtain employment, even though he's at an age where some people retire. I mean, when we look at those facts, you may not like the results she reached, but she did consider it, didn't she, and his ability to meet this obligation?
Well, she may have considered it, Your Honor, but I believe that the numbers themselves pretty much tell the story. I mean, just accepting the factual determinations of the court, Mr. Hudgens' income totaled $4,440 per month. She determined that his reasonable monthly expenses were $4,750. That left him with a deficit of over $300 a month. The respondent, on the other hand, had monthly income of $1,163, reasonable monthly expenses of $2,945.23, which left her with a deficit of exactly $1,782.23 per month. So what the court did was said, well, this is her need, so we're going to give her that money. Now she breaks even, she can make ends meet. But the court determined that my client, Mr. Hudgens, already had a deficit. And by paying her that amount of money, he's now facing a monthly deficit of more than $2,000 every month. The counsel for the respondent stated in his brief, I think he pretty succinctly articulated perhaps the standard that Judge Engish followed. At the conclusion of his argument on this issue, he said that Judge Engish neither unfairly enriched respondent nor sentenced appellant to penury. Okay, if that's the standard, then by all means, affirm the decision. But I would submit that that's a pretty low bar. To simply not have to sentence someone to abject poverty, if that's the only thing we're looking at, if that's the definition of what is just, then I think we have a problem here. We have an issue. Mr. Hudgens is 74 years old. He can work, or at least he could at the time of the order, but he's being forced to work for the rest of his life so that he can make a payment of spousal maintenance that enables her to break even. He can't do it. He can't afford it. He's not going to be able to afford it. And so simply stated, I think that's the question. How is it just, regardless of what the judge determined or how she justified it or rationalized it, how is it just that one person should have to suffer a $2,000 a month deficit on a $4,400 per month income, and the other gets to break even? Our argument is that the party should share the pain, that it's pretty simple to make that determination. You take that $2,100 approximately deficit, you split it in two, they each share the pain. They each share a deficit of about $1,000 a month. And therefore, the spousal maintenance obligation should pay some. There's no question about it. But it should be reduced from the $1,782 by about $1,000. That's fair. That's just. That's what he can do. That's essentially the argument here. It's not complicated. The only other issue is this issue of the evidentiary hearing. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. Because of the odd factual circumstances here, this was not a motion for modification. This was an original determination of spousal maintenance. The case was a default judgment and decree from 1998. 16 years passed, and ultimately 18 years passed, before there was actually a motion before the court to establish maintenance. The reasons for that can be argued, but ultimately none of that really matters. It's that all of this time passed. To decide the case simply on the submission of affidavits and informal discovery, I don't think does the case justice, especially since there have been allegations here of dishonesty on the part of, quite frankly, probably both parties, but in particular the appellant. Having sworn testimony, having them testify before the court would have been very helpful in determining credibility and determining what was appropriate in this case. To deny the request for an evidentiary hearing on the basis that supposedly we did not request it, I don't think is accurate. I think a review of, and I pointed this out in my brief, the initial hearing in the case was on September 13th of 2016. That was essentially a scheduling conference. If you review the transcript, that's really what happened there. The judge adopted a suggested procedure in which the parties could determine after discovery whether an evidentiary hearing was appropriate and whether it would be requested. That is what we did, that is what we followed, and then ultimately the judge made the determination that it wasn't necessary, in part because it had not even been requested. Respectfully, I disagree with that. Under the procedure of this case, it most certainly had been requested.
Well, can I just go back to the spousal maintenance, because I'm looking at the judge's order now, and let me find the provision. Oh, it's on A013 of your brief in the appendix, and it's provision G. And the court there basically says, I understand there's going to be a shortfall here based on his current total income, but the judge then comes up with a way for the for part of this to come from the benefits, the military benefits, and then basically says the remaining $557 per month is the shortfall, and that she believed that number one, he could do some part-time work to get this, and number two, that he could also that he's been actually coming up with the money all this time of about $1,500. So this is a little bit more, but he's demonstrated an ability to do this through the years.
And that was before he retired, Your Honor.
Well, and I understand that, but her determination was that this is not unreasonable. And in reviewing that, I mean, what's our standard of review here on you know, whether we affirm or reverse this?
I believe it's abuse of discretion.
Okay. And why is this an abuse of discretion? I mean, we know that the judge considered it, and the judge weighed these factors, and this is the result that the judge came up with. How can we as a reviewing court find an abuse of discretion here without just reweighing this evidence and coming up with a different result?
Well, I believe that, well, first of all, addressing the issue of the pension, I don't really see how that solves the problem or addresses the issue that we are presenting. The pension in its entirety is part of his income. The judge made the determination. Now, one of the things she could have done that she didn't was actually make a property division of the pension, and she didn't do that. I don't know why, but I can speculate. But she basically said, no, we're going to have some of this spousal maintenance be paid directly to the respondent by doing it this way. But that what that means is if you're going to say, well, that kind of solves the problem, what you're really doing is you're actually reducing his income by the $1,224 per month. Now he's down to $3,200, $3,100 a month income, if you want to look at it that way. Either way, the deficit remains the same. And the only point I'm making as far as an abuse of discretion is that, well, I think that on its face, it's an abuse of discretion simply because of the incredible discrepancy between the parties. $2,000 a month deficit versus breaking even. The statute says it needs to be just. I don't know how under any circumstances that's a just result.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
May it please the court, my name is Glenn Bruder. I represent the respondent, Margaret Hudgens, in this appeal. Although the facts of this case are fascinating and unique, the legal issues addressed by the trial judge were not novel or unique. The district court's maintenance order neither abused or broad discretion, nor did it incorrectly apply the relevant statutory and case law.
Well, could we go right to this spousal maintenance determination by the judge? And I'm just looking at that, and I want to go to that same page, A.013. And there, the judge did do what counsel said. It appears to me that she took his income, which was made up partially of this retirement income of $2,449.24, and she says, "Well, I'm going to give half of that to the wife here," and so that reduced his income, did it not, by another $1,224.62? Isn't that correct? Because he was claiming that as part of his income. I mean, that's how I'm reading that. Is that the wrong reading?
Well,
so instead of being $309.76 short on his current income, he's now an additional $1,224.62 underwater.
Well, the judge did a couple of things here, Your Honor.
I mean, is that right, though? I mean, am I correct? Is that what the judge did? And I'm not sure about how the math worked out here.
I think what the judge did is she included in his income and essentially said, you know, she included his entire pension in his income and then said, from this, you clearly have enough money to pay that amount, and I'm going to order it be paid directly to Ms. Hudgens because, frankly, I don't think you're going to pay it to her if it's not paid directly to her out of the pension. But before she even got there in this order, the judge followed exactly what the statute required. The judge looked at the respondent's need, and I don't think there's any dispute that the respondent has some significant need, little if any ability to earn an income, has been subsidized by her children. On the respondent's need, there's no real concern, there's no real question here. Then she looked at the appellant's ability to pay maintenance. She included in her calculus the entire pension payment and then looked at what his monthly budget was, what his needs were. And here, and this is what's overlooked by the appellant for obvious reasons, the judge said, I don't really trust much of what appellant is presenting to us. Not only did he engage in a variety of fraudulent activities before we even got to court, but let's look at his budget. It's gone all over the board during the course of this post-dissolution
proceeding.
Well,
and she did that, but she then says, though, I mean, she looked, because at one point he was in excess of $6,000 on his budget, and then she comes back, though, and says his reasonable monthly budget is $4,750. That's still on that same page.
But she said something else, Your Honor, and it might even be on the same page. And she said, but I think he can even make further cuts to his budget than this amount. And indicated that she didn't, that may be what his monthly expenses are. She also acknowledged it's kind of a guesswork and highlighted, for example, his mortgage payment increasing 2.5-fold without any documentation. So she said, I'm guessing here and saying this is going to be his monthly budget. But I'm not necessarily saying it's a reasonable monthly budget. I think he can cut further in that monthly budget to reflect the marital standard of living. All through this process, Your Honor, she's making her best effort to follow the statutory procedure and the rulings that are laid down by this court in making those calculations.
Well, is there any question here, though? I mean, here we have a situation, if we adopt what she says this current income is and his reasonable monthly budget, mm-hmm. plus this division of the military retirement benefit, he's going to be in a little bit in excess of $1,500 under each month based on the current budget. Am I correct?
I don't know if I would agree based on the current budget, but I certainly think he alleges that he's going to be under $1,500.
I'm again looking at his reasonable monthly budget is $4,750. So he's about $1,500 under. Now, she does come through and indicate that she believes that he can do some part-time work. Is that...
That's correct. She also said that she was going to transfer the cash values of certain life insurance policies to him, and he could use that to subsidize the monthly spousal maintenance payment. Again, the judge is doing exactly what the statute in this court's case law requires her to do, which is to consider his ability to make those payments. The appellant, citing an unpublished decision, McCallum, says, well, this is just like McCallum. No, it's actually just like Paterka, which I note at page 13 of my brief, where the judge says, yeah, I've looked at it. There may be some difficulty in the obligor meeting his obligations, but I believe that he can do it even if it's difficult. And that's, in fact, what that decision, the Paterka decision, was in fact affirmed by this court. And that's exactly what this particular judge did in this case. So again, the trial court judge clearly was aware of what the governing statute was, clearly was aware of what the factors were that she needed to look at to determine whether spousal maintenance should be awarded, clearly knew exactly what this court required of her, and she made a good faith effort to do it. The appellant's arguments amount to, I don't like the way the trial court judge exercised her discretion. But the point is, she had that discretion to make her decision on spousal maintenance, and she did so. And there's not a basis on that, on the record, to reverse what the trial court judge did in this case.
I think what is being argued, though, and I guess this is an issue for us, is it's an abuse of discretion to leave her with no unmet needs at the same time you're leaving me with a $1,500 shortfall based on your own calculations of what my reasonable monthly budget is.
No, it isn't, Your Honor.
I can explain why it isn't. Thank you. That's what I want to ask you. Why is it not?
Because in this instance, the trial court judge faced a situation where the respondent presented a very modest budget. And the judge said that is an entirely reasonable budget. It is entirely consistent with the marital standard of living. The respondent presented a budget that included all sorts of items that he had involved debt he had incurred voluntarily after the dissolution, which under Fulmer, cited at page 11 of my brief, the trial court judge could have ignored if she wanted to.
But the judge did knock all those things out. And that's where she came up with the new number of $4,750.
Well, the judge knocked those things out. She also ignored the income he was making from working part-time to come up with that figure. So it's kind of a wash on that. The appellant, on the other hand, presented a budget that the judge made clear she had no confidence. She had to figure out what his monthly budget was. She made it clear she wasn't confident in that figure, but she added that there was also room for him to reduce that budget to more fairly reflect the marital standard of living. So the judge did everything that she was required to do. And I would add, and this is not really reflected in the judge's order itself, but what she could have done if she wanted to do was to chop down the budget further by saying that the appellant ignored the fact that he had remarried, and presumably his wife was making some contributions to that budget, and he couldn't pretend that these were all expenses he was incurring entirely on his own. But I think after 17 months and a lot of discovery, this judge was ready to make a ruling and wanted to make a ruling, so she wasn't going to reopen that issue.
Well, what about the argument of counsel that this husband was 74 years old? I mean, is it an abuse of discretion for a judge to find that a 74-year-old has to keep working to meet his own needs and pay spousal maintenance?
I don't want to quibble. I think he was 70, but I understand the principle.
I thought he was a little younger, too, but we'll check the age.
I understand the principle, Your Honor.
I was looking forward to driving a bus when I retire.
I mean, that's basically what the judge said. You can make it up with your part-time work because you've been doing it, so you have to keep doing it.
Well, I don't really...
Is that an abuse of discretion? Or is it...
I think it's something that has to be decided on a case-by-case basis, whether it's an abuse of discretion. In some instances, it would be. In some instances, probably isn't. In this particular instance, I think the testimony was that he took this part-time position as a way of paying for debt that he'd incurred after his remarriage. And under those circumstances, I think what the judge did was well within her discretion in this particular case. In another case, it could have been a different outcome. The judge clearly, like I said, the judge clearly had the discretion to do that. This judge might, some members of this tribunal might have decided the case differently, but this judge knew what the law was. She exercised her discretion. She's the one in the best position to make those calculations, and she did it. And under the circumstances, there just simply isn't a basis for a reversal. Frankly, I didn't plan on talking about the hearing issue, the evidentiary hearing issue, because I think that's a non-starter. You've got a disabled woman who is proceeding in form of pauperous, who's never been to Minnesota, who lives in Virginia. And we've had 17 months, I believe, by my calculations, to do discovery. There have been numerous rounds of affidavits. The rule says that the court proceeds by affidavit, and the appellant didn't fulfill the statutory requirements to request or attempt to demand an evidentiary hearing. All of those things all line up on the judge doing exactly what she did. And it would be oppressive, frankly, to my client to somehow demand that she incur the financial expense of traveling to Minnesota for the first time in her life when she's in her 70s and disabled to attend an evidentiary hearing. I would suggest it might have been an abuse of discretion there for the judge to demand that my client come to this state under these circumstances. In this tribunal, we generally argue legal issues. I'd ask the court in making its determination here not lose sight of the fact that there are people involved in this case. My client does live a life of penury in Virginia because of the unique circumstances of this case, because of her surprise at discovering over a decade later that her marriage was over. She's subsidized by her children, and this case needs to be brought to an end, and my client needs to get the level of support that the district court judge decided was fair and just for her. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now finally hear from counsel for the appellant, please.
Thank you. Just a few comments in response. A lot of discussion about the budget. I would submit to the court that the judge made a determination about what the budget was. And all of this discussion about, well, he could chop it down a little farther. It's hard to trust what it was and so on and so forth. She made her decision on that, and we live with it. She determined that the reasonable monthly expenses were $4,750. It's just not relevant to argue that that's reasonable, but something less is actually reasonable.
Well, and the court also found that his standard of a living was better than that of his ex-wife.
Yes, but the I mean, the way to address it is to say your expenses are too high, and I'm not going to accept them. We're going to knock them down farther. And if that's a fact that she determines and then we accept that fact, the deficit isn't as high. It's lower. But based on what she determined, that these were his reasonable expenses, equalizing standards of living as much as she possibly could under those circumstances, this is what we're left with. We're left with this $2,000 per month deficit. The Fulmer case, I just want to address that. I don't think that is applicable here simply because that was a modification matter. It wasn't an original proceeding. It doesn't really apply in this case. The question about cash values, the judge did make a determination that what were approximately supposed to be about $17,000 or $18,000 in cash values in these two life insurance policies that my client had been paying the premiums on all these years, that we made the case that he should have the benefit of those cash values, and that if he had those, it could assist him in meeting his expenses and, in fact, meeting the spousal maintenance obligation. She did order that. But then because of some confusion about what insurance policies there actually were in force, some confusion resulting from representations made by the respondent to her counsel and then counsel to the court, the judge made some sort of a ruling about appellant establishing that, in fact, that insurance policy was in place, and once he established that, then he could get the cash values. Well, the only insurance policies that were ever in play were the ones that we had been attempting to get information through the entire discovery period, but respondent claimed she didn't know anything about them. After the judge's order came through, we then received information that not only did she know about the policies, had the cash values, but in fact had taken a loan of about $8,500 against one of those. And those were funds that were supposed to go to the appellant. It never happened. They never went to him. And even though we requested that subsequently, the judge did not order it. So that's essentially assistance to the appellant in this matter that really never came to fruition.
As far as the debt that was incurred after their separation, it was debt associated with his new wife's medical bills. That debt, it was not included as part of his expenses. Am I correct?
That's correct. Not as part of the $4,750. We did point out that if the debt was included, that was another $1,370 per month, and then his deficit would have been up over $3,000 a month.
Okay.
But I'm not making that argument essentially here today. That was made in the brief basically to point out to the court that, this is what she determined. The actual deficit that the appellant is incurring is very substantial. But if we simply accept her determination, her factual findings, we're still at $2,000 a month negative, and that has to be corrected. Thank you.
Thank you. The matter is submitted. That being our last oral argument of the morning, we are adjourned.
Thank you.